We're speaking with Professor Kristen Sylvian. She's an associate professor of history and library science at St. John's University in the New York City area. However, she's back in Kalamazoo, where she was a professor at Western Michigan University until 2011. Thanks for speaking with us.
Oh, Andy, I'm glad to be back in Kalamazoo and to hear your voice on the radio again.
Well, it's good to hear your voice as well. You are in, I guess, the boat with a lot of other professors and with their students in having to continue instruction online because of the COVID-19 pandemic. What's that been like?
Well, it really has been a whirlwind of the past week or 10 days, Andy. And of course, I'm well aware that I share the responsibility with thousands of faculty and staff across the country that, you know, for many folks, of course, they're familiar with online instruction. It's very strong in certain areas. In fact, at St. John's, for example, our entire library and information science program was already online. But when it comes to the humanities and the social sciences, while we have some classes online, the vast majority of our history classes, particularly at the graduate level, remain very traditionally structured graduate seminars where, you know, we sit around the table for several hours and talk about it. And obviously, we can't do that any longer. So I've had to readjust everything and try to still stick with the syllabus that has been established and all the books that have already been ordered and the students have purchased or rented, and try to kind of pick up the pieces and make it as meaningful and as intellectually rigorous as possible.
You know, from your perspective, what do you think, you know, sort of speaking generically, what are the biggest challenges for students when they have to, you know, suddenly transfer from, you know, that in-person experience to doing it online?
Well, as you see, you know, it operates on so many different levels, Andy. And as I said, of course, I am best qualified to speak about things in the humanities and in the social sciences, where, I mean, part of it is simply the culture of education. And I have to say, Andy, that I am gravely concerned about the long-term implications of this horrible crisis on higher education and on education in general, but specifically with regard to higher education and in the humanities. I fear that the crisis will ultimately encourage colleges and universities to pressure faculty to offer more and more online instruction and to move further away from traditional classrooms, largely driven more by a financial model and staffing concerns rather than the intellectual value and really what's best for the students. I hope that that continues to be paramount in the decisions that administration makes. But that's certainly one concern right up front is, and I know that that's shared by the students. I mean, my students overwhelmingly feel very concerned. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say frightened, very dismayed about the interruption of their, particularly their graduate education, and they're trying to launch their careers. And so I think that understandably this generation, and as a you know, professor, I want to try to remain sensitive to their concerns that, you know, that they're on the edge, as I said, of finishing their graduate education or launching it or launching a career. And like, why this disaster? Why this crisis now? Why me? And I think that just trying to help students, you know, work through the anxiety that this has created, I think that's far larger than wrestling with the technological issues, which, of course, those also involve issues of economic and social justice because, you know, located in Queens, New York, I am painfully aware of the enormous void that exists among our students in terms of their ability to be able to purchase both the devices and, of course, the services that you need to be able to fully participate in this online realm. So I guess those are among the concerns that I have. Certainly in a big part of our public history program and that was something that my program now shares with Western, is that we place numerous students in museums, libraries, archives, historic sites, cultural heritage tourism agencies. And that's an important part of their education, is to get experience working with nonprofits and for-profits that operate in this realm. And, of course, trying to consider or reformulate these internships and practica that are strictly remote and do online work has been very difficult. I've spent literally all week on the telephone and on the internet trying to reformulate about a dozen graduate internships. And some institutions and organizations have the staff, have the technology to be able to do this. But others, like the United States Park Service, for example, I was just notified yesterday that their staff has been directed to curtail supervision of internships. So even if the students could get there, they can no longer work on the property, and the Park Service personnel are no longer are able to supervise students' interns. So those are just, you know, a small handful of, and again, I realize that that's my little teeny tiny corner of higher education, and that there's so many far more complex and sweeping issues that face faculty. But as I said, I think everybody is very concerned across disciplines, across colleges, about what the long-term implications are going to be for higher education, and how much more thinly stretched will faculty be. And this reliance, of course, on adjuncts has been well publicized. Now I think we're going to be pressured more and more to rely on technology. And I think there's a big question, what's to be gained versus what's to be lost, about education and sitting in that classroom with your peers. And it'll be interesting to see how this all gets resolved.
Now, you know, most of the people who are students in colleges and universities these days are, as the saying goes, digital natives. But what I'm hearing, it seems to be that even they are struggling with this.
Yes, yes. And particularly, like, you know, Andy, I have now a dual degree program that is a history Master of Arts degree, and then you also earn a Master of Science in Library and Information Science. And the Library and Information Science portion is entirely online. The history portion is traditional classes, and it's so interesting. Every semester when I have students that choose to sort of focus on one part of the program than another, as opposed to doing the online and the traditional classes at the same time. Because so many of them indicate, you know, when they go into that online world, how isolated they feel from their peers. They feel isolated from the faculty. I think a lot of them feel that they don't have that same kind of warm and fuzzy and kind of strong connection with the campus itself. And even if you don't necessarily know the dean, when you're on campus, you hear about the dean and you sort of see the administrators. And it's, you know, it's interesting to see, as you say, even if these students have done a lot of online classes as undergraduates, they still want to be anchored to a campus, to their peers, to the faculty. They just like knowing those places are there, you know, even if they don't necessarily utilize them the way that the administrators think that they should. And I'm thinking most particularly of the library now and what's happened to our college and university libraries, because they simply don't use them the way that the students don't use them the way that, let's say, you or I did, Andy, when we went through college.
You mentioned that you are concerned about possible long-term effects of having to shift everything online because of the pandemic, and the student experience, I'm sure, is part of that. What are some of the other effects that you think might happen if that trend continues for other reasons in the future?
Gosh, it's hard to say. I mean, I really, as I said, am struggling, and I know that the agencies that we work with, and of course in New York, I mean, these range from, as I mentioned, the Park Service, but, you know, august agencies or museums like the Whitney Museum of Art. I mean, Whitney is an example of a museum that has the staff and the support that is able to provide my student with a kind of remote project. But as I said, the Park Service has punted on this. So it's not necessarily kind of the size of the institution or how wealthy it is. It's, it's a matter of kind of how they perceive their audience and their kind of responsibility to their constituency. So I think that is a big thing, is like, how are we going to simultaneously educate our students in the theory that they need to be solidly grounded in theoretical ideas that underpin the disciplines we study. But at the same time, we want students to be thoroughly versed in practice and to understand how the theory works in the so-called real world or the professional world. And I have to say that I'm at a loss to think of how I am going to structure internships and practica with a wide range of agencies, ones that are both well-funded, like the Whitney Museum of Art, all the way down to far smaller community organizations. Like, for example, when I was here in Kalamazoo, we had a graduate student, John Stempian, who worked with the Liberty Hyde Bailey Museum in South Haven. Now, that's an example of a place that was, totally a shoestring operation in terms of struggling for every single dollar. So, Andy, how do I, help my students get experience serving those kind of nonprofits like the Liberty Hyde Bailey Museum that's really thoroughly based and rooted in local communities? How do I help them prepare for careers in institutions like that when we can't actually get them there? Do you see what I mean? I mean, there's only so much that you can do online. And it seems to me that today's students need help in analyzing the media that they are bombarded with. They need help interpreting the literature and the theory. They need assistance seeing how this applies in the professional world, particularly given time, technological, and financial realities. And I have to say that, I'm hard-pressed to figure out ways of how to do that online. Now, I'm sure that in time, when I do more reading and get more practice at this, I'll hopefully grow more adept at this, because I don't know how good I am at this now. But I do see that this is obviously going to be limited. As I say to my students all the time, we can sit here in this classroom and talk about it in seminar, all semester. But at the end of the day or at the end of the semester, we do need to go out and examine how this is all going to apply in our profession. And I see that that's a real challenge when the education is entirely based on what happens over the internet. This is particularly, I'm gravely concerned about writing. And I know that you can sort of teach writing online, and there's lots of people who are fantastic at it. But in my experience, students really need almost one-on-one kind of help and the kind of assistance that, as I said, I feel like I'm just not as effective in providing the assistance that I feel my students need, talking to them over the phone or doing it on the computer, that there's something to be said for being there in the classroom with your peers and interacting with professors. And I don't know that we could ever replicate that.
Well, thank you. And we've been speaking with Professor Kristen Sylvian, who's back in Kalamazoo. She worked was a professor at Western Michigan University from 1996 to 2011, I believe, and is currently at St. John's University in New York. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks again, Andy. And be safe. Best of health to you all.
And to you also.